Welcome to another episode of Rough Talk VR, a weekly podcast with in-depth game reviews, exclusive developer interviews, and the latest MetaQuest and virtual reality news. We join our hosts, the father-son team of D. Scruffles and Stratus today, as they spend another episode breaking down and discussing the world of virtual reality.
Hey, welcome to this episode of Rough Talk VR. Today we're joining you with another exciting interview. We have the producer of an upcoming game, Arcade Paradise. Yeah. Today we're talking with Sam Clay, the producer of Arcade Paradise, an upcoming game on the Meta Quest, but it exists flat screen as well. I remember you playing it a couple of years ago at this point.
I don't even know if it's been that long. If you could tell, if it is, it is. But yeah, I played it on Xbox.
Yeah. So before we go, you know, too crazy explaining what it is and stuff, Sam, do you want to introduce yourself a little bit to the listeners? Tell them, you know, who you are and what you do over for Arcade Paradise.
Yeah, sure. So, thanks. Awesome. First of all, thanks for having me on. I know it's always difficult getting guests from different places around the world, but obviously your dedication. I'm here for Reggie, by the way. That's the only reason why I agreed to do this. So my name's Sam Clay. I'm a producer at Wired Productions, but more so the producer on Arcade Paradise. Blimey. I have been working on you said you had played it. It's been out for nearly 2 years now, but obviously prior to that, I'm talking the development took 3-4 years, especially the whole world collapsed with the world shutting down and all COVID or whatever like that. So it's been a hell of a long time, and we've managed to prolong it even further by let's make a VR version. So yeah, that's where we are now. With it coming out on the 25th of April. So it's all very exciting.
And so you've been the producer since the OG original version?
Yeah, the original pitch idea. I've seen it from the start. And seen it all the way through, and it's been a wonderful development for everyone who's got involved with it, but also like seeing the arc of a very, very interesting, unique game, you know, come to fruition, as it were.
Well, I can say that when I played it on the Xbox, I know I immediately told you, I'm like, it seems like this is built for VR. Like, it could be done in VR, and I've seen a handful of games where I've felt that. So it's cool that this game actually made the leap to say, well, why can't we go to VR?
And how did that conversation come to be? You know, what was the point where you guys were like, I think we can do this game, but in virtual reality?
Very much a sort of, if we were going to bring it to a platform like VR, you know, a different way of playing, it had to make sense. It had to be be fun to do. And pretty much the process of that was play about with it and see if it works in VR, if it makes sense in VR. And it did, especially the washing elements of it, because the rest of the arcade stuff just makes sense. Once you can describe most arcade games, you know, you just think to yourself, well, these are going to work perfectly in VR, light gun games or games you'd see at, especially in here in the UK, is sort of bowling alleys seems to have arcades in. I don't know what it's like in America, but, you know, basketball hoops and all that sort of stuff. So it made a lot of sense. We did a lot of testing on it, and we just, we ran with it. And we have produced an incredible experience on top of what already existed. I mean, I think the washing element is actually probably, I should probably have to explain in a moment, but like the moments that in flat were very, maybe not the most thrilling of gameplay, but in VR they're sort of bizarrely next level and really enjoyable to play.
And that's exactly why when I played it on flat screen and was trying to make a mental leap in my head to VR, I was like, just mechanically it would make sense to do it in VR versus, and I'm not saying anything against the flat screen, but just to me mechanically, I'd rather be the one physically doing it than a, you know,
just buttons.
Yeah, it's you can feel it. I mean, all you have to do, and there's people who have played it, but I suppose we should rewind and let people know exactly what conceptually the game is that you're going to be doing, because I could just assume, well, everyone's played it flat screen.
Yeah. So do you want to explain to listeners exactly what Arcade Paradise is?
Do you know, it's really funny because someone the other day asked me what it is, and it's not like you can't describe it to someone in 5 words. Do you know what I mean? It's not a conversation down the pub to explain to someone what you've been playing. So Arcade Paradise, you play a character called Ashley. It's set in 1993, early 90s. And it's sort of a homage to a lot of things in that era, but also a homage to that dead end job you had. You know, you went going through being a teenager, going through those years of just having really crappy jobs. And Ashley's final option is basically working for her dad, for Ashley's dad's laundromat. Otherwise, it's effectively you're going to the meat packing plant to get a job there. So your dad goes like, right, here, have one of my many businesses. You better not mess this up. You know, gives you one last chance. And effectively, you start a day, and the game's tutorial is how to do all the cleaning and washing of clothes. But in the back room of this, the laundromat is a selection of arcade games, and you go and you empty the hoppers in there and you get the money out of them, and you soon realize that they're making more money than the actual business itself. So what do you do? Well, of course you get on a computer of that era, and you message your dad with a graph a graphic saying, look, these are making way more money, we can make really out of that. And he says to you, no, you're in the sanitation business, you know. Game, you won't make any money from games. Get on with what you're supposed to be doing. And naturally, you go behind your dad's back to then begin your Arcade Paradise. And we lead the player on the story of that, while they get to play 30, 40 games. Do you know what? I'm lost for the exact number. Not that it really matters, because there's so much to play in Arcade Paradise. It's it really is quite an offering when it comes to the actual arcade titles themselves, the cabinets.
I remember you're bringing me back to that story. I remember that conversation when you're talking to your dad, and it's like, it seems like a no-brainer, because you're right. There's proof that you're showing, like, it's profitable. So you're running like a speakeasy, more or less, for
a side hustle.
Yeah, side hustle. For the... And you can pimp, if I remember correctly, you can really upgrade it pretty good too. Like, change it from the basic settings. Yep.
And so without spoiling anything, yeah, you sort of at first are going, you know, sort of sneaky undercover, and then the back room you end up expanding to the point where potentially, and obviously the game's been out quite a while, that you end up it ends up being turned into an arcade entirely. But the whole premise of that is that sort of sneaky behind your dad's back. You'd never want the front of the business he knows to suddenly become an arcade, because then your time's up immediately. But yeah, it's got all those 90s tropes, you know, the sticky carpets and all that. If only we could have the smell and, you know, the real effect of the arcades, but we're not there yet.
And this might be a hard question to answer, because it kind of depends on how long people are willing to kill on each individual arcade game. But how long would you say the story is from start to finish?
Do you know what? I saw someone speed run the game the other day, and that took them 23 hours. They did that on a stream, actually. It's flat, I would say, first time, you're looking at 40, 45 hours. VR is going to be a lot longer, because it's, you know, depending on, well, if you're comfortable throughout, then you're probably doing exactly the same time. And we've made changes to make the numbers make more sense for VR, so it's not too stressful for the player. But what you find there is Nosebleed Interactive, the developers of the game, they really put together that sort of one more go feel to the title. So, you know, you might be 11 o'clock at night and go about, call it a day and get into bed, but there might be that one little task that next thing you know, it's 1 a.m. in the morning and you might be late for work and work the following day.
So would you say that the game really takes a full you know, speed once you pass that washing phase and you really unlock the arcade.
So it's really funny, actually, because you've just said past the washing phase. We never tell the player what they should be doing. So there's no actual, like, over, you know, there's no, like, you must clean these clothes or, you know, like, something that if you don't do that, you'll get, you know, game over, failed state or something like that. So it's really fascinating here how people, when you say nothing at all, lots of people assume, like, oh, I've got to do this. No. You can start the game. You can do the game's tutorial, and then you could just go and play arcade, you know, just make money through playing all the arcade games in the back. That's literally what you could do. So it's really fascinating watching people play it, especially when, so you have a watch on that every time a cleaning cycle or a dry cycle finishes, it beeps at you and says, like, go and empty their clothes. It's amazing what just beeping someone's watch makes people do, because you don't have to do that. You're just notifying that they're doing it. So you watch people play it and they back out of the arcade and they go and do it and they go, oh, God, okay, fine. And back to the arcade. And you're actually making this perfect world, because that's what we're trying to incite of that era. It was like that one more go, you know, it was the going and buying a game in the old classic big boxes and, you know, getting a bus home or the journey home and reading every page of that manual, you know, smelling that fresh page, smell of a game manual, and just like really soaking up a game before you even played it. So that's what we really try and homage. And that's why when you purchase from the computer each machine, you get that small description of what it is, but you've got that actual excitement of finishing your day in the game to then, you know, start a new game and get your new game, you know, see it get delivered in a really over the top fashion, but then it all starts over and over again, really.
So call me crazy, but as far as the laundry goes, like when it tells you, like, hey, somebody's dropped off a basket of clothes, you get compensated for this, don't you?
Oh, yeah, you could.
You don't have to do it, but you do.
There's incentivized.
You
incentivized.
Do get money for doing it. So I found myself in flat screen, like, it was a hustle, because if the shit shows up, I know it's going to show up every day. Yeah, I'm going to do it. Yeah. And I'm trying to crank out. I was more focused on cranking out as many loads of laundry as I could, as quick as I could.
That is all the credit to the programmers and the developers, because, and the game designers, but there, it sounds like that there's no fail if you don't, like, there's
you
no,
just don't make, you won't make the money, but again, you're going to see something that you want to buy. And granted, you can live off the hustle of the machines you might have in the back, but
yeah. How much slower is that process going right to playing the games and just working off the arcade machines versus, you know, like he did, and hustle on the laundry?
Well, the point is that the arcade machines are making more money than the laundry. So when you go and play the games, each cabinet have different goals. When you unlock these goals, like, they're sort of like in-game achievements, right? They add a multiplier to how much that machine's paying out for you. So effectively, the more games you play and the more things you tick off and complete, you'll make more money than the arcade machines. But if you know how much the washing is going to make you. So if you're happy to just dart around and do the washing, and then at least in the back of your mind, you're like, oh, okay, I can make this, that, and the other. But you don't have to do it. I personally like to routine my day, because you have to clean the place up. You have to go and obviously clean the toilet, which in flat, you're effectively plunging a toilet. In VR, we all had to go the next step, didn't we? You had to actually brush and clean the actual toilet, which is a very visceral experience. And like, I'm glad we're the first game out there where you have to physically clean a toilet in VR. I'm glad we've done that. And you make money from that. And then when you're cleaning up the place and putting all the rubbish in the bag or trash, whatever you want to call it, you go and you throw that bag into the garbage truck, where would you put all your rubbish?
A dumpster.
Anyway, dumpster. Yeah, there you go. That's a big dumpster. Yeah, massive dump. Yeah. Basically, it's a Sunday, people, when we're recording this. My brain doesn't work. And you get money for that as well. So you got all these incentivized bits that you know are going to make you money. And also in VR, throwing the bag into the dumpster is just so satisfying, because you can sort of like Kobe it and try and imagine that you're some sort of basketball star for those 3, 4, 5 seconds.
If I remember, the toilet's pretty filthy.
Yeah.
So
in VR, that's even better.
Yeah.
It's pretty lewd.
Well, I feel like that this is
people are disgusting, man.
I feel like, well, hey, that's realistic to how I'm sure how an arcade toilet would actually look. You know, all the pizzas
in the beginning, yeah, more laundromat. So
I always wanted the toilet to have a sort of story to it, like you'd get notes. Do you know what I mean? Like that sort of. So you sort of worked out who it was that was defecating so poorly, and do you know what I mean? But it just didn't really make much sense to do that.
Oh, that would have been a funny little overbranching story arc.
Call
me crazy, but this sounds like it would be a blast in co-op as well, having your buddy clean the arcade. Is that something that's ever been in the discussion? Obviously, that's easy for me to say just as a selfish consumer. I mean, it's a lot of work to implement, but has that ever been something you all have talked about?
Never for the cleaning or laundrette side of the game. Of course, we've had co-op or versus and, you know, multiplayer for the arcade titles for a few of them, be it air hockey, and we've got a twin stick shooter that's really, really, really good called Zombat. And we've done multiplayer for that, but no, it's never been a thought to do. I would imagine it would be fun at first, but not actually be that entertaining after, you know, because you just end up wanting to play the games, and then by the time you're playing the games, you're playing them single player anyway, aren't you? So it's not really, it wouldn't make too much sense.
No, that I get that.
Yeah, it is one of those rare cases where the thought of co-op would be better, you know, when it's better in the head than in the reality.
The application of
100%.
You want to be left to your own to play games, right? That's what you want.
You'd look over and see your buddy doing the same shit, just sitting there playing a game.
And was this your first VR experience?
Development or experience?
We'll start with the experience, and then we'll go with the development part after.
So I know he's gone and done some very interesting things. I actually years and years ago met Palmer Luckey at GDC and played on one of the early Oculus dev kits, like really, really early. He went on to make a bit of money, didn't he? And that was my first ever VR experience. And I thought, oh, this sort of is interesting, but graphically, it looked like a PlayStation 1. Roll forward probably 4 or 5 years ago, because that was my initial VR experience. I thought, oh, VR has stayed pretty much the same. It's just, you know, the headsets have got smaller, whatever like that. But no, 4 or 5 years ago, I was like, no, I mean, now now we're cooking. This is quite impressive. And then when we thought about actually developing some VR titles, we got on board with so arcade was not our first rodeo, as it were. I also worked on The Last Worker, and Tin Hearts has just had a VR release as well, so done plenty of VR development. But the thing with VR that I think I'm a little worried about, and this is why it made really a lot of sense to do arcade, was that I feel like the first thing you think about VR is either you do sort of sports titles, like sort of basic, or you've got a gun in your hand, right? Those sort of tropes are possibly there's quite a few of them. So when we looked at Arcade Paradise in VR, and because, as discussed, it's like, well, we'll try to see if the washing works, and it does. So we immediately knew that it was fun, and it was therefore going to be a really unique experience for people who weren't lucky enough to have it in the first place on the flat screen, really.
So The Last Worker, eh? You guys got a thing for making people have to hustle in the games. It's The Last Worker. Yeah, you had to work, man. Yeah.
You're an Amazon delivery driver, basically.
Oh yeah, dude. Some of the commentary was it was funny.
And what was were you a producer for that game?
So I was the producer on The Last Worker as well. So maybe there's like this. Yeah, maybe secretly inside, I'm trying to destroy people's lives. I don't know. It'd be a hell of a time to find that out.
Gonna come out with the McDonald's simulator next, you know.
Is it Supermarket Simulator on Steam that's like in early access? That, I mean, that's doing the rounds at the moment. I always think that that's basically playing, you know, that's what kids play when they're like 3-4 years old, you know, have their own fake shop. So we're not far away from that, are we? Everything's gamified and everything's a game by this point, which I'm not complaining about.
No.
I know you're a sucker for all the miscellaneous Sims, lawnmower Sim, power wash Sim.
If it's got Sim at the end of it, I'm in it. I can't help myself.
That's hilarious. And, you know, kind of, we always like to dive into our guests, you know, how they got to where they are today. You know, prior to working at Wired Production, you know, tell us a little bit about how you got into the game industry.
Oh, bless. Okay. do you know, it's really funny, right? Because I've speak to a lot of people about, I'm really into games. How do I, you know, what do I need to, what college course do I need to go do and all this like that? First of all, like, depending on if you wanted to go develop games, then I would suggest, obviously, probably learning how to code and all that is probably quite useful. So, yeah, because I never went to uni, never did any of that. I did the University of Life, you know, that awful saying. I have worked in games. So I'm only a young 33 years old. I've worked in games since I was 16 in some capacity. I used to, and this is hilarious, when forums were a big thing back in the day, I used to just write game reviews in these forums. And I bumped into on a forum, an Xbox forum, someone who wrote for an actual like tech website. And he messaged me and said, you're really good at like writing these reviews. You should like ask the companies for review copies and all this. And this is, you know, this is, like I say, well, nearly like 20 odd years ago. And so I'd be the squeaky kid who was ringing up the PRs at these games publishers going, hey, can I get a copy of blah, blah, blah? And I've spoken to a lot of them since who are still in the industry. And they always said to me, they knew I was really young, but I was so polite and I was just so like welcoming and pleasing to their day that this, you know, that little, you know, young me would ring up whatever. Like, anyway, week by week, I was getting copies of games through the post and I was just like kid in a candy shop sort of stuff like that. So I just had the best time about it. Started going to actual game preview events and stuff like that. And then just little old me just would classically ask people. Like, I remember one day the guy called Richard Wilcox, who's quite old school in the industry, bless him, he was the executive producer on a TV show that was broadcast in America at one point called Player. It was previously Gamer TV. And I just said to your man, have you got, like, can I do work experience or something like this? Because up to this point, I wasn't making any money from writing about games. It was just a labor of love. And bless, he went, oh, no, I don't do work experience, but I'll give you a job if you want. And then next thing you know, I basically started from then and was editing and producing a TV show that was the longest running, I can't remember what the marketing spiel on it was, but it was like the longest running magazine show for video games. And no, it all went from there, really. Maybe when you're that young and you're that sort of spurred on by everything, you probably talk a bit too much, but at least the enthusiasm gets you places, right? I've always said to people, I've never had a job. Like, this isn't a job to me. This is one passion that's led into a sort of a career. And I'd say to anyone who ever wanted to, who just sits there and hears stuff like that, just go and do what you love and just don't care if you think it's crap or people would think badly of it. If it's what you want to do, go and find a platform to make it happen and just go from there. Your passion will drive you further than anything else will. And if you don't have enough passion for it, then it probably isn't for you. But there's certain things in life that you'll find that you just suddenly, whoa, you know, light bulb goes off and you know that that's the thing for you. So, yeah.
And how did that go from longest running magazine video game show to a game producer? You know, when did that transition to the actual development side?
Bless. So then I went from that to the video editor at VG247. And then I had, bizarrely, that was actually YouTube time and we were doing, that was like early YouTube time when YouTube revenue had just started and that was doing very well. And then I bizarrely had a bit of burnout from that because I was just knackered. I felt that I wasn't the enjoyment spark had slightly gone, not completely gone, but I knew something was different. I could still have done that every day and I would have been absolutely fine about it, but I'd never felt the same way. And then I bizarrely found myself enjoying sort of the managing of other people. You know, all the fun stuff of playing games is totally fine, but I actually was kind of like, I'd actually prefer to just give other people some games, they play it, and I'll just put it together. Do you know what I mean? So bizarrely, I'd gone sort of full circle, which then led me down the sort of trope of I ended up, yeah, again, bumping into someone who was going to do a HD remaster, a remaster of a game I used to play in the 90s called Constructor, which was a strategy game, a very, very unique strategy game. And yeah, again, it's like, I'd love to work with you on this. So he said, hey, do you want a job? So I then was ended up being the producer on Constructor HD. And that was the start of my development. And then it just I knew Wired Productions for I knew Leo, Jason, and the people who run the place. And one thing leads to another. You release one game and then you send an email and you politely ask. But I was very incredibly lucky actually with that because and then you end up working on such an amazing game like Arcade is that everything sort of went into alignment. It was during COVID. I was doing another line of work, nothing gaming related. I needed a sort of break from ending a development cycle to, you know, I didn't know what I wanted to go do. I'm very passionate. If I work on a game, I have to, like I say, have to feel passionate about it. And didn't know what I wanted to do. COVID happened, so I got sort of stuck in a lull. But everything fit into places. So everything fit into place. So I am a very, very fortunate guy. And that's obviously how I've led to being finally on the podcast.
I think it's amazing, though, that you've, it seems like a little bit of luck, some persistence.
Taking a chance, though.
Well, you know, and not saying no to every opportunity that you asked for. So, I mean, you ask somebody like, hey, I'd really love, because there are people who will say shit like that. And if they were hit with that same, hey, do you want a job? They would be like, oh, I didn't think you were really going to offer me a job. Where you're saying someone saying, you know, I'll offer you the job and you pounced on it.
Yeah, you took it.
You took full advantage of the opportunity. Another opportunity comes around. What do? You mm-hmm. pounce on it.
Start to build the resume up too. Now you've been a producer of a couple games.
It's a great story from like, and I think it's good to hear that like, and you're right. If you're going to go into coding, you know, you should probably go to school or you could even self-educate. There's plenty of people who've done that. Yep. But your story's good.
Yeah. It's a unique one, but it's a bit of an inspirational one.
It shows you can do it. And the key word's the passion. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, why do we do what we do? Why do we, no one's twisting our arm. We've never felt dragged down to have to, and you're right. You do something that you're passionate about. It doesn't feel like, work regardless of the hours you put in.
And you said you have to feel, you know, a certain level of passion towards a game to work on it. You know, what was it about Arcade Paradise that was like, this is something I want to devote, geez, at this point, however many years between the flat screen development and VR development?
Arcade's really, really special because it's of the era that I sort of may have been born in the 90s, but you know, you never experienced that decade, do you? I always think that the decade you experience is your 15, 16, do you know what I mean? So technically, the decade I would experience would be the millennium, which is unfortunate because the millennium wasn't as exciting as the 90s. But no, the wonderful thing about Arcade is that. And if you go on, there's actually a Reddit that's run by the community, and something that's naturally spawned is there's so many amazing feel-good stories in there of like, this reminds me of this, or I play this game with my partner, or it reminds me of my dad when he was still alive. You know, all these sorts of stories. And throughout the development, what Andreas Fernigal, the game's creative director, has managed to do is curate this incredible development process of the game where everyone got involved. Everyone, even my cat, who is coming behind me. She's in the game. Like, but all these ideas just were sort of just formed from conversations that were had, and just there's such a labor of love. There was never like a strict rule set of the game has to be this, that, and the other. It was a homage to the time of the 90s and the time of the arcades. Even the music in the game, all created by ourselves, and they all have likeness to songs of that era. So there's a 20 plus, I'm not good with my numbers on a Sunday, but we got an album that's basically an absolute earworm of the 90s. And I've had so much fun working bizarrely, not only on the game, but working on the music for the game, because it was, it was another creative process of back and forth. I'm not going to tell you I'm a music producer or know a lot about music or the creation of music, but we managed to find another bit in the middle where it was like feedback of these tracks. I don't know probably too much about the artists they were sort of based on. I couldn't tell you from a technical level, but I sort of knew, you sort of know as a group of you that it makes sense, these sorts of sounds or this, that, and the other. And even that was amazing, because we'd made this incredible soundtrack before the game had even come out, right? So we made this universe, universe within this album of tracks that no one had ever heard of, because they obviously don't exist, because the game isn't out yet. I had been listening to them for months because I'd seen them being created and whatever like that. And they were in the soundtrack in my phone, right? So I'm commuting to work, listening to this music that doesn't exist in the pub, and I end up in this sort of weird moment where I think these are real songs that have come out, like, and had actual releases. So then when we did our launch party, we put on a band to play all these songs. Now, the only people in the room are us at Wired, the developers, and like a handful of other people who recognize these songs, right? That have like proper solid ballads, this, that, and the other, like earworm songs, I can say. And everyone else at this launch party has got no idea what's being played, because it's not, it's not the radio. It's not, it's not the latest pop songs on stage being performed. It's like this bizarre amalgamation of the 90s being played to everyone. And we had this moment during the party where we looked at each other and we said, like, we're really enjoying this. Is everyone else really enjoying it? But of course, they've never heard any of it. So, and luckily, with the game coming out now, and you can listen to the album, the soundtrack on Spotify and all the other platforms, that we've managed to produce this sort of monster of a game, because it harnesses so many different things of that era, So it's just been so much fun to do. And I'm not at all annoyed. I'm not at all annoyed that the development continued and we did the VR version, because it's been so much fun to work on.
That's awesome. And I got to ask, have any of the songs, were they your creations?
There is one. Well, I'm not talented enough to perform. My saxophone's in the loft or attic or locked away. I think my music playing days are over. But there was one track where I'd been given, and I was, can't remember off the top of my head what it was originally called or conceptually called, but been given this track, and I was like, it kind of works like as an instrumental, but because I don't think this sound would make sense for too many lyrics. So I was like, yeah, we're halfway there. How about we stick a saxophone on it? And Kieran Pepper, who produced the soundtrack along with Ben Pickersgill, came back with this track and was like, we stuck a sax on, it really works. And that's become like one of my favorite songs on the soundtrack. And I'd like to, I want to at least hold the mantle that I was the one who caused the pier to have a saxophone on it. So, and we've used it a lot of our trailers and bits and pieces we've put out. And I like to see YouTube comments where it's like, what's the classic, like, what's the song? like the name of the track or whatever like that. And then people end up searching for that track because they're all like fake album. They're all fake artist names, right? So we've had people go like, oh, I really like blah, blah, blah. What other stuff have they done? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, what album's that off? And I was like, no, it's just a one-off, like. So yeah, we've probably made a universe out of just the music, which I'm quite impressed by.
It would be cool to, in future games, include references
different
to it
songs
from the same artist, like
it's all made up artists,
like, yeah, it's all right. The same universe, you know, you find like an album of one of the bands in the last worker or something like that. But it's cool because of the way everybody's, you know, with the music, everybody's work went into it. Or like you said, your cat's in the game, you know, everybody's, you know, life is in the game, no matter what happens with the team from this, you know, whatever people go and work on or 10 years from now, there's always going to be a little part of them.
That's an imprint. Yeah.
Yeah. Of Arcade Paradise. That's really cool that, you know, for, I guess, development culture, I'm sure it created a culture of everybody being passionate about the game and its development.
Yeah, so there's a few little I love when people spot the Easter eggs that were in there, and we sort of, you know, then have to explain it. So when you unlock the when you get one of the upgrades, you get a little plinth on like a placard, employee of the month sort of sign in the arcade, and the photo on that of that is Dre as a teenager. My cat's in the game because we basically, and it was my fault, I suggested it, is I wanted some sort of challenge that was based off of, like, in the 90s, you got chainmail, you got emails from random people. So we already had the email system in place that basically the game would tell you bits and pieces from the website. You order the arcade machines, Arcade Mania. We always wanted to put something in there that basically indirectly taught you things about how to tweak the prices and adjust how much money you make out of all the machines. But what we then did was, like, well, in the 90s, you always got random emails from random people, or you know, people had pen pals, or, you know, just communicate with random people. But the idea was that we had rivals, so people who were coming into the arcade and beating your high score. So we put in a few of these, and one of them, in the Wired office, I said, right, we need a name for one of these rivals. If on a whiteboard, I put whoever gets the highest score on Woodgow, which is like a chopping, you're chopping a tree down and you don't want to hit a branch. It's very, very basic game design, but it's just a high score chop them up. I'm going to go with that. Anyway, so I was like, right, by Friday, whoever's highest on this high score board will name the rival after you. And Sam, it's amazing when you share names with other people. Sam in our QA team, he got the highest score. I think actually he got 1338, and I was upset because I thought, well, you should have stopped at 1337 and just like ultimate, you know, gamer win there, right? And anyway, so next thing you know, write out these emails for this Sam character, obviously sharing the name. And like 6 months into the game coming out, Reddit got filling up with people saying, fuck you, Sam. Pardon, but I can't swear.
No, you can.
You can.
Yeah,
you can. We're from Massachusetts. We had to make it explicit.
And so it became this thing in the community. Oh, fuck you, Sam. And it was because every time you beat the score that you're told, you know, you get, every time you do it, you get an email back saying, oh, I bet you can't beat this. People were, and this is brilliant, were getting annoyed that they constantly were getting the reply and they just couldn't beat the score. And this was because, and this is the more perfect part about it, the way how that challenge works, and I'm happy to talk about it, is all it does is look at your current score and then put a few higher it, and then you get the email. It's not ever like email one's 50, email two's 100, whatever. So your first email could come in at like 300, and it could be 300. Now you've got a score 305. So people were setting the bar so high and receiving the email, and they're not being able to beat it, and they're all beating it too much, and then getting absolutely stuck in this circle of like pain. So, like, everyone was just getting really fucking angry about it. And at the end of that challenge, we were like, well, what do we give the player? Money seems a bit boring, and, you know, not that great. if it was, you know, if it was a Zelda game, you'd get a better sword or some bollocks like that. I said, no, well, no, it's got to be something completely useless. So you get given the attachment to the final email is a photo of my cat. and all the rivals, when you finish the rivals, yeah, you get a photo of a dog or a cat or pet of anyone who was in the game dev. So I just think that's really, I love that idea of like people working really hard for it and then getting something that's, what? Like, oh, well, thanks for that. But the one thing I really wanted to do with the Wood Girl one was, and Dre said no, is I wanted it to be infinite. I wanted it to constantly plus one you. And then I wanted to see if people would just keep going. Like, oh, I've got to complete this. And I thought, no, that's a bit... I was told it was a bit too cruel, so we didn't do it.
That reminds me of one of my all-time favorite games, Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic. There was like a swoop bike racing thing where no matter what your time was, you know, for two more times, that the time was going to be like a couple seconds faster than yours. So you were best to go just over the limit time. Yeah. But I remember being a, you know, 10-year-old, 8-9-year-old kid, whatever, and first time I go full speed, and it's impossible to beat from there because your first score is so good. You're like, I don't think I can go 4 more seconds faster than that. That's awesome.
I like the sense of humor around it.
Mm-hmm. That would have been awesome to have one that goes infinitely. And excuse my ignorance on this, but are these all kind of made-up games inspired by real games, or they're licensed ones? Too.
Correct. So they're all inspired by real games. The reason why we didn't do licensed games, obviously there's licensing. B, it didn't make any sense in the universe we were building, and you end up having a lot of fourth wall breaking things. And also, it's not really a creative process. Then you're just basically housing a arcade game, like an actual arcade, inside a other game, and it just wouldn't make much sense. Also, I don't think people would play the games as much, because they just find the one that they really like in real life and they just play that, as opposed to what we've done is we've created unique games that every time, like I said earlier, when you purchased it, you're sort of excited. You're excited to play what's coming because you don't know what it'll be like. So, yeah.
Yeah, a lot more creative freedom and doing your own too.
And he's exactly right. You know, if you put five nostalgic machines that you've played before,
you're just gonna have your
favorite one. You know,
So that must have been fun too from a internal game development side. You know, making all
coming
of these
up with all of them. Yeah,
are there a bunch that didn't make the cut too? They're kind of like a cut content of arcade games.
Anything that didn't make it. It was either on paper, that's a good idea, and then blew up, and it was just absolutely, you know, basically a game within itself, or it just wasn't fun enough to you know, to be worthwhile. I know that I put I'm the, in one of our DLC titles for the flat version was Summer of Sports, which was a homage to the one time. They used to be, I don't know if they still do them, but they used to do Olympic games. I know track and field existed years and years ago, and this is sort of a homage of that. But they used to, for each Olympics, they used to do on like Xbox 360 or whatever, track and field games where, you know, you'd I don't have a controller to hand, actually. You know, you'd do two simple button presses, the quickest you do, whatever like that. And it was a homage to the time that I had some mates around and a friend of mine. There was... I think it was like the Beijing Olympics game. In the running, it was left and right on the stick, and he'd done it so fast he'd completely burnt off the skin of like massive hole. It wasn't even a tiny little, you know, like five, you know, tiny like pen prick or whatever. It was like the entirety of his hand. The skin would just come off, and I thought, ah, oh, because commonly you'd burn this, right? And I felt so bad. I'm like, oh my God, you've got to go home. Just like, I can't hold anything. So yeah, that was sort of my, I always liked those games as well. So that was sort of the reason why that was put in as a DLC title. Luckily there's been no injuries, but I just always remember, and I felt, so don't fault for doing it, sort of, but I felt really bad about it, because something like that if someone hurts themselves in a certain way, I know that if it was an injury that would annoy me, it then annoys me. Do you know what I mean? Even though I'm not the one in pain, but I'm like, oh, mate, that would so annoy me. Yeah. So when your friend gets stung by a wasp or something like that, and you're like, oh, I'd be annoyed for weeks. So I'm not the one who got stung.
But at least it's like your friend got stung by a wasp because your pool was so fun to hang out in.
They hurt their
hand because they loved your game so much that they playing it like that. And will all the DLCs come to VR too, or is that something, you know, you have to wait and see how things go?
I can't, obviously, I can't comment for that sort of stuff right now. What I will say is we will be supporting the game in exactly the same way we did the flat version. You'll see plenty of updates after launch, especially feedback from those playing it in VR. There'll be we take a lot of feedback on board to really make the game the best that it can become. It's also interesting because we've done a bunch of VR-fied games for the VR version that are more that are fully immersive. We did consider at one point doing all of the games as VR immersive, but basically we found doing that is just, you made the games considerably worse. Like if they just were, it just didn't make sense to make everything VR fully VR immersive, because you just made a worse game and it just didn't feel right. I mean, I don't even know how you would play a twin stick shooter with physical controls. You're not going to have as much fun as you would with a gamepad. But we're always looking at ways we can add to the title and improve things. But I'm really excited to hear the amount of feedback we had for the original release and the really awesome stories we got out of it. I'm really excited to hear people's VR takes on VR.
Sounds like it'll be even better in VR.
Coming out right around the corner too.
Yeah, so April 25th.
I'm curious if this studio is going to put something else VR related.
I was going to ask that before we wrap it up. I got to know.
It's like, you know, what do we got, two now?
Yeah, well, The Last Worker, well, that was in development for VR and flat screen at the same time. And then obviously this one came over. So it seems like Wired Productions has a little thing for VR, but maybe I'm speculating.
I couldn't say.
Fair enough.
We always have something up our sleeves, that's for sure. But
well, hey,
Hockey Paradise is the only VR game or only game where you can properly clean a toilet. So that's, you know, what else do you need? Why do you need any other game?
Yeah, well, I appreciate that as a studio, you know, VR is on the radar in some way, shape, and form. You know, as big VR fans and advocates, you know, that's great to see that from a professional side. You know, we're seeing studios like Wired be like, let's do it. Let's take the chance with VR. So that's awesome. And I got one last question before we wrap it up. I know we're stealing you late on a Sunday.
Yeah.
With a nice time difference. So, but since, you know, you were the original producer on the flat screen game as well too, is it all the same team working on the VR version, or did you have to grab a new team because, you know, it's VR?
Everyone who worked on the VR version worked on the flat version. If anything, if there have been people who joined the project, they've been additional, but they've all played and know what made the flat version work so well. So, luckily everyone stuck around. I was about to say it's the, what's the saying with the dodgy second album? Well, I can't remember what the saying is. It's not that at all. So everyone who was involved, I would never say such a thing. It's been amazing, and it's lovely to have continued our story all together. It would have felt a bit weird if we'd had people come on board that weren't involved for the first.
Well, that's a product, I think, of everybody being involved in the game and the way they were, you know, their life kind of being attached to it. You know, it's like, of course, it's coming out to a new platform. You're going to want to be involved in that, so.
You can even get even further immersed in it now because of the mixed reality that the Quest 3 options, the Quest offers. So if you want to feel if the four walls of a grotty laundromat aren't for you, you can pop into MR in game and you can place all the cabinets in and around your actual home. And you can play arcade at home, quite literally.
That's freaking awesome.
That's pretty cool.
So, Arcade Paradise coming April 25th. I'm hyped to go check it out. you know, especially after this interview, I got a bad habit where I'll be excited for a game or I'll have some question or something like that. Then we do an interview and then I have 100 more questions and I'm twice as excited. So definitely excited to see how this is received in VR. I imagine it seems even better fit, and hopefully Wired Productions, and hopefully they keep bringing over good VR stuff too. So before we let Sam go, anything else you wanted to ask?
No, I got my notepad full.
Yeah, good. I think we easily could have done 2 hours with Sam. He definitely got quite the story alone just of how you started in VR.
Great story of passion and opportunity.
Yeah, so good stuff. So to the listeners of the show, if you enjoyed what you heard today, go add it to your wish list. Stay tuned, you know. Arcade Paradise coming, later this month already.
Right.
So thank you again, Sam, for joining us. If you enjoy this episode, subscribe, rate us 5 stars. And we'll check you out next week.
Take care.
Ciao. Thanks, guys.